Welcome to NCBA's Cattleman's Call podcast with host Lane Nordlund.
Hello, everyone. It's time for the Cattleman's Call podcast. Lane Nordlund, happy to be with you here today. And the weather is lovely outside here in Orlando, Florida, when we had this conversation during CattleCon 2024. It's actually about the same temperature as it is in home for me. What about you, Matt Makins?
Yeah, it was about the same.
Yeah.
Denver was mild, and here has been pretty mild. Although watching the weather folks this morning on the television, talking about how cold it is, bundled the kids up.
Yeah,
I'm like, no, my kids would be t-shirts today going to school.
It's been great trying to get, or when you go out to dinner down here, because nobody really wants to sit outside.
Well, that's true.
And every restaurant I've been to, I'm like, we'll sit outside, and we get seated right away. So
I bet.
As you heard, Matt Makins, meteorologist, joining us here today. Of course, you've heard his voice on the podcast and on Cattleman to Cattleman and the National Cattleman Publications. And Matt, as we're down here in sunny Orlando, it's been quite the start to 2024 weather-wise. That was quite the cold snap we saw here a few weeks ago.
Yeah, for parts of Nebraska, you know, it was a longer duration cold event than it was last year, and even the last year got a lot more headlines. This one was a little bit more impactful. So that's just one example. I mean, there were impacts everywhere else because, you know, freezing rain and snow down through Oklahoma and the Osage. So, you know, big impact there in January as we kicked off the year. Or here locally in Florida, we had a lot of rain to kick off the year. So,
yeah, it was definitely cold up there in Montana. And, you know, the big question was, is the ground going to freeze with this? Our ground's not froze up there. Our crowds are just mucky. And it's so, which is good to get some moisture in the ground, though, for sure.
That definitely helps. El Nino is kind of the booger because it's kind of known as the mud producer across the north. You know, you're much milder.
I would put up with more mud, though, Matt. I could put up with some mud. But, you know, it does seem, you know, we've caught up the last year several times talking about El Nino, La Nina. So where are we at right now? Obviously, we know that these are forecasts. These are predictions. We're watching weather models. We're looking in the past to see what these trends have been like. So when some people hear El Nino, they're like, oh, this is exactly what we're going to get. But the more you dive into it, obviously I'm not a meteorologist, I'm not a forecaster, but I so much enjoy talking to you and learning more about just these trends. But where are we at now here as we move through the first part of 2024 and reflecting back on the weather patterns of 2023?
Sure. Today, El Nino has already passed its peak, and it's already quickly on the decline. And depending on where or how you measure this El Nino event, there are some atmospheric signals that already suggest we're into La Nina, or at least it's crossed that line toward that direction. So where we are now is this El Nino event is tapering off. And part of that is normal. Comes with a season, January, February, March. That's typically when it declines anyway. So that's not out of the ordinary. Mm-hmm. And with some hindsight, the last time you and I sat down was in San Diego. So that was mid-July.
Yep.
And we had talked about kind of that very thing, how every El Nino is different. This flavor is probably more kind of moderate to weak than the strong stuff. And even though this event was fourth strongest, technically speaking, since 1980, it certainly hasn't acted like it. It's been much weaker.
Yeah. And so what were some of those factors on why maybe it didn't last as long in some people's opinion or whatnot? Because there are a lot of armchair quarterbacks out there, especially on Facebook, talking about weather, especially in the agriculture community. But what were some of those influences on why maybe that was not as what we expected it to be?
It, you know, the ocean itself was right on par with forecast, super strong, and that's in the ocean, and that's where you measure your El Nino or La Nina. It's that difference in temperature in a part of the ocean of the Pacific. This one never really evolved in the atmosphere. So a lot of cases, the atmosphere will react to the ocean, and they're like lock and step. They're dancing together, beautiful two-step, okay? This year was kind of a chaotic swing with a new pair of dancers. It was, you know, the ocean did its thing. The atmosphere occasionally was on pace, on beat, but never really fully embraced it. And there's, we could do three podcasts about why, but just some bullet points on why would be, you know, historically we go through these 20, 30, 40-year cycles. And within those cycles, El Nino will be more prevalent, or La Nina. And we happen to be in a cycle since the late 90s where La Nina is going to be far more common. So that's one factor. Another is a lot of times we measure El Nino in the Central Pacific, right along the equator. And a lot of times you want the Northern Pacific, so around Alaska, the west coast of the U.S. You want that ocean to kind of mimic that and work in tandem. This time, that ocean never really changed. So really, the only variable that changed with this event was the ocean right where you measure it. Nothing else globally really helped to support it. And without, you know, that support system, it's on its way out.
So the big question is, when can we expect maybe La Nina to appear? What may that look like? What do the trends suggest?
Usually, whether it be La Nina or El Nino, you don't really worry about it until fall, winter, and spring. Okay. That's when you have the biggest impact. But with that said, this event likely kicks in by the summer.
Okay.
And that will bring some impact to summer. It'll bring impacts to corn late in the season. It'll bring impact to grazing by midsummer. And so it's rapid. If you would compare, if you will, this kind of trajectory we're on to some of the years in the past, that would suggest La Nina's here by July or so, June, July, August, so midsummer. And then if you look at modeling, there's some indication that it will be a little bit faster than that. And I wouldn't argue with the modeling based on everything that's happening and how quickly this one's ending. So bottom line is sometime this summer we'll kick off La Nina and see those impacts.
So for our friends that, because everybody gets confused between La Nina or El Nino sometimes, but obviously different areas of the nation and the world are affected differently by this with dryness or moisture. What is that pattern going to look like here for the continental U.S. when we're looking at what that weather pattern may be with La Nina, especially if it's going to start a little earlier than normal?
Sure. The kind of the most general of the regional impacts, El Nino brings water to the south, drought to the north. La Nina kind of does the opposite, drought to the south, moisture to the north. That's very, very general. And you can see those generalities globally too. So cattle production in Argentina, mostly northern, southern Brazil, into the corn, La Nina brings them drought, much like the southern U.S. Australia is the opposite. El Nino dries them out, La Nina makes them wet. As we go through this transition, we're seeing, and you pointed it out, early this year, and late last, for that matter, the southern U.S. is getting a lot of water. Areas around Houston are flooded, mm-hmm. You know, too much water in some cases. But that's El Nino kicking in, spreading moisture across the south and the southeast. As we go through this transition, we will watch as still some good spring moisture here in these areas. But then through the summer and the fall, you're going to see that drought come racing back, and people's memories will be like, I remember a rain earlier this year, but we're right back in drought.
Yeah.
So for them, they'll be like, that El Nino didn't do anything for us. And across the north, into your neck of the woods, you know, your snowpack's probably not going to be very good this year, so runoff is going to be a bit of an issue. But through the transition, we'll spread some of that hopeful spring moisture to you, help your pastures for the summer,
hopefully.
And you may not have that impact until, you know, next winter when you'll get snowier and colder again.
Yeah. And so here in the short term, for especially I think of the cow-calf guys that are calving right now or going to start to calve, and that doesn't matter if it's northern tier states or here in the south. What are the forecasts here for the next few months as we try to maybe get some moisture this winter or just make it through?
Yeah. As we go through February, you know, occasionally there's going to be some colder than normal temperatures coming through. And you know, the biggest impact on that is going to be Oklahoma, Panhandle of Texas, parts of New Mexico, southern Colorado, southern Kansas. And that's going to be through February. And a lot of calves drop in that territory in February, obviously. And with those cooler snaps will come moisture. And it's going to be cold rain or snow, heavy wet snow, obviously problematic. El Nino dramatically increases your risks from winter issues, calving, in February, March, and early April across the southern plains. And that's not to say the northern plains don't feel that cold also. But long-term, as you look at, say, today through April, warmer than average for the northern plains, including your areas in Montana, too.
Yeah.
But the south, they increase their risks of moisture and cold at the same time.
Yeah, and nobody complains about having an open winter and not having to feed as much, especially up in our neck of the woods where we have so much forage still left over from last year. We need those cows to go eat it. It could be catastrophic wildfire up there possibly with how much forage we have. But we're also hopeful that moisture is coming so we can put up a crop of hay and whatnot on the livestock production end of things. But obviously pretty concerning for maybe wheat pastures, though, down in Kansas come next fall, too.
Sure, yeah, yeah. You know, this season is going to be much better than last. Right, there wasn't much wheat.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there were pockets that was good, but overall it was not a good one. This one's going to be okay, assuming there's not, you know, a sharp cold snap without snow coverage or something in March or something, but it looks good.
Yeah.
But yeah, as we get into next year, so what would we be talking about, you know, spring of 25 at that point.
Oh, man, it's hard to think about.
Time's going crazy. Spring of 25, you're likely looking at bad forages again. That's going to be due to cold, due to drought. So this period in the near term is good for us. But to your point, yeah, next winter we'll have to watch for those reverse impacts.
So some of our listeners, you know, I think the forecasters and meteorologists, they really have a lot of viewers and listeners are very fascinated with it. First off, if they knew how confusing a green screen can be, but what are some of the tools that you utilize to make your forecasts? And because I know there's different models out there, but what do you use when you're reaching your audience on a daily basis?
And this is not throwing shade at any other meteorologist, climatologist, anybody out there. We're all different processes. I personally feel like you can't present a forecast to anyone if you do not know the history. You've got to couch everything in historic terms. That makes it understandable to a person to know, was this event like 15, 16? Because that jogs a memory. Yep. When it comes to ag. So without history, that's a problem. And so the vast majority of my month is looking at what pattern are we about to go into. And how does it match with past years? Is there a match? And observing those trends. And then that gives you a firm, you know, foothold, if you will, on then looking at modeling. Does modeling make sense in this case? Does history support it? Is a similar result going to happen because history has shown it and computer projections show it? I think all too often you'll get a lot of forecasts where it's all model-driven, and I see a lot of those floating around, and it just doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like right now, to call for a lot of cold in the northern plains or throughout Canada, that doesn't work in El Niños. And yet I see those kind of forecasts a lot. So there's the historic element, and we have great databases for this, global, U.S., all that kind of stuff. You can go back more than 100 years and a lot of precip records for the states. That's very accurate. So huge data sets. And then bringing in all this new technology, new modeling, AI is a buzzword, not insemination, but intelligence in this case, you know, and that helps us kind of more quickly process the historic data and is making some of these computer models more accurate. But there's all kinds of tools out there for us. I think, just as a quick aside, not necessarily that I will use it day to day, but there's a new methane satellite that's about to launch. CU in Boulder, Colorado is the one behind that, and they're gonna try to track methane down to very specific sources. And I think from an industry, that is a technology we all need to keep an eye on. Mm-hmm. and see what happens with that one.
Yeah. And, you know, you speak of tools. The one tool that I really have learned to dislike is the weather apps on my phone. I don't think they're reliable whatsoever. It could be 15 minutes apart between my house and my father-in-law's house, and it's a totally different forecast.
Sure.
And it could be the same app.
Yeah.
And is that because it's a computer that's just generating readings and there's no one to interpret it? I just don't trust it. I would rather read your reports and summaries and just look at what my thermometer has to say. I know the wind's going to blow in Montana. The app's right, accurate right. on that. But well, I guess, what are your thoughts on mobile phone or web-based prediction weather service?
Depending on the app, some are really garbage. Yeah. They just are. Some have really good value. There's some radar ones that I use. And great data.
Okay.
But you're not alone. I hear that everywhere I go to talk, somebody has examples about that. And the problem is that, you know, these apps are largely based on kind of generalized modeling. And yet, we try to dumb that data down, for lack of a better expression, to get it to your phone easily. So yeah. we're not hogging up your data.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, if you had unlimited data and didn't mind downloads and all that, you'd get great forecasts.
Yeah. yeah.
But we're trying to push you something general. And the point that you select, like your location point that you select in your phone, could be 30 miles away from you. You know, yeah. that happens yeah. a lot, where people's point is somewhere different county and all that. And so there are errors there. Where there's value in them is I would use them not for specific 20% chance of rain tomorrow. There's not a value there.
That's but good to know, because in the past I would. There could be a rain tomorrow. Yeah.
yeah, not how they work. But the trend.
Okay.
So if you see the trend getting wetter by your weekend, if you see the trend getting colder, that's the time you got to go to National Weather Service.
And that's
someone credible.
So I do a lot of the time. Yeah, yeah. I follow their Facebook pages for our regions of Montana, and that's
going to be your
reliable.
Best source. Yeah. So use the app to get your attention at something that's coming up, and then go. Yeah. I always say go to the Weather Service. Yeah.
And of course, obviously, we look at these are management tools for our operations. The information that you share is a management tool, because we are dependent on weather to grow our grass, to raise our cattle in a healthy environment, or to make sure we're putting straw out when it gets cold and taking those precautions. You know, I guess, how can producers utilize weather information to a more efficient manner as a management tool?
Sure. So widely spread, okay, with that. If you're a vet, you're worried about freezing your backside off preg checking right mm-hmm. now, right? So there's that aspect of, you know, that kind of practice of how do we allocate staff, those kind of things coming over the very short term. And on the same side is, you know, with this recent snap we had in January, a lot of producers are going to want what I need to find a place for wind chill. I can get the actual temperature. I get the wind. I need to know wind chill for this feedlot.
Yeah.
Wherever it may be. So there's those short-term aspects, and those ones are really bad. I just send people to Weather Service for that, you know. But then, yeah, we've got to think about, well, I'm ready for February. I'm hearing this La Nina thing coming back. I know that brings me drought. How much corn maybe should I pre-buy? Am I looking at just next fall as an issue? Am I looking at 3 years as an issue? How much am I buying? So I talk to people that are either I need to know tomorrow, or big producers that are asking, like, Matt, how long is this La Nina going to be here?
Yep.
Because we're planning out for 2025, and we're hedging bets on 2026. We're pre-buying fuel, you know, diesel prices. We're stocking up there, you know, whatever it may be. So it's hugely valuable. I'll say just listen to me. But that's not good, you know. Listen to all the weather guys and gals, and you combine that, and you get a really good sense of where your risk management should be placed going forward.
Now, let's talk about the age-old debate between actual temperature and wind chill. That's a debate my wife and I have, because I'm the one out there doing a lot of stuff when it is 48 below with the wind chill, and she goes, well, it's not that cold because the actual temperature is this. I'm like,
It's that cold.
yeah. What is your take on that? What is your pearls of wisdom on that age-old debate, so I can go home and talk with my wife, who is a lawyer, of course. So.
Have her with wet hair on a 20 below day with zero wind and have her stand out there for 10 minutes. And then send her out on a 20 below day with wind, and she'll change her mind.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'll say Matt sends his regards.
Say Mark did, just in case she gets mad. you know, it's absolutely a factor. Because what wind chill really is telling you is the impact on your skin or the animal's hide. Yeah. And you're stripping heat away at a much faster rate than if you were just standing there in calm 20 below. That wind is stripping your heat much faster. So there's a much more profound impact. And if you're wet on top of that, that's stripping heat away from you too. So, you know, the feels like temperature, the wind chill, whatever you want to call it, heat index for that matter in the summer, huge impact on us. You know, right now, a lot of guys dropping calves are like, I need to know the wind chill.
Yeah.
I need to know it.
Yep.
And by the summer, you know, the feedlots and stuff, they're going to be like, I need the heat index, you know? And those, yeah, it's not the actual temperature, but there's a reason we call it the feels like.
Those lawyers are just too by the book. My wife, you know, yeah, she just has to follow.
That's true. I'll write it in a book and she can read it.
Okay,
we'll put it in like a fancy leather-bound
usually
publication.
I'm wrong 90% of the time in having discussions with my wife, but I'm going to take this one as a win, Matt. But so for our listeners out there that have joined us before, maybe it's the first time that they're tuning in to our conversation here today, where can they follow you along more on your forecast?
The NCBA puts out all kinds of stuff, and that's from all social media channels, and those would be more short-term impacts. How much rain for the next 10 days, or what hazards should I worry about in 2 weeks from today? So a little narrower focus there on social. And then you can pop on the C2C YouTube channel, and that's a little more in the weeds of the history. Like, what is this El Nino event doing? How is it matched up historically? What may it bring us over the next month? Mm-hmm. So you're broadening your view a little bit more. In the National Cattleman newspaper or the Directions magazine comes out a couple times a year, then you're really starting to go out much longer term in those print publications. You're seeing, okay, what may the setup be like for the rest of the year? And you're going out much, much farther. So depending on where the exact source from NCBA, you're going to get a ton of stuff. And, of course, on top of that, I work for Cattle Facts, and we get much more into the weeds on the risk management side and what's coming in the season and those kind of things. And those are other products out there too.
Well, again, I always enjoy our talks and understanding or trying to understand the complexity that is weather. But Matt, you got a long day here today. So we had to start our conversation here today at 3 a.m. here on the East Coast. So we could fit this in. No, we didn't start that early. It started early. We're both mountain time boys. But
it's true. It's early on our body clocks. Although your wife would say there's no such thing as a body clock.
Well, she is currently 8 months pregnant, so she doesn't sleep right now either. We're not going to sleep for a while.
Well,
so.
Then don't do the cold hair and the cold.
No, we won't do that. Yeah, everybody's like, we're surprised you're down here, Lane. I said she told me to come, so I came down here. So we're
she needed a break from
me. She needed a break from me. But Matt, any last thoughts you'd like to share with our listeners here today?
I think a lot of times people may be not afraid, but intimidated or shy or anything to ask questions. You have to ask questions. You know, all these events are different. You hit the nail on the head. One El Nino, why didn't this one act like the other? Just ask. Me or whoever else you follow. I mean, we're in it, in the data. If something doesn't make sense, just ask. And I wish people would ask more questions. It would help them understand. And then maybe it opens resources for them to make better decisions. Not that they're not making good decisions, but maybe a more informed decision in some cases. So just ask those questions.
Well, again, friends, check out all of Matt Macon's forecasts and information on all those different platforms brought to you all the time. They're on all those NCBA Facebook.
I don't sleep.
You don't sleep. Yeah, I don't. I didn't think you did.
No.
I'm
like you. We're just there.
Yeah, you should just start. You should start a new app then and just start uploading. You know, like.
Oh, I should.
Maybe I'll just give you my location and you can send me texts every half hour.
There you go.
It's 2 a.m, but you know we're the
your windshield just dropped 1 degree. It's 38 below now.
Honey, it's 38 below now. Matt says. Well, Matt, thanks for joining us here today, and have a great time here at CattleCon.
You bet. You too.
Well, friends, that will do it for today's Cattleman's Call podcast. I'm Lane Northland. We'll catch you next time.
Thanks for tuning in to NCBA's Cattleman's Call podcast with Lane Northland. For more information, visit ncba.org and make sure to subscribe to the podcast today.